You're listening to The Purple Mystic, a podcast for the modern witch, with your host, Natalie Sedgwick. Welcome back to The Purple Mystic, a podcast for the modern witch with your host, Natalie. Today I am talking with Vincent Higginbotham. He has a new book out by Llewellyn Publications, How Witchcraft Saved My Life. Good afternoon, Vincent.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going good. I'm very pleased to have you on today, and I appreciate you taking the time to come on and talk to us. So tell me a little bit about yourself, and then I want to go into how you came to write the book and kind of what that journey meant for you. So have you been practicing your whole life, or how did you come into the craft in the first place?
So basically I started off with an understanding of witchcraft. Like I was opened up to it earlier on from catching my sister practice. And then I never really dove very far into it. I spent a lot of time on the streets and basically homeless. So because of that, I didn't have the opportunity to, you know, access books and spend a lot of time learning. It was a bunch of going to bookstores and sitting on the floor and reading books in stores and trying to, you know, obtain the information I could. In those small little moments. And essentially where that led to was me not really being able to have a practice for a long time. Being homeless, the first thing that you're thinking about is not practicing witchcraft. It's like getting cigarettes and something to eat or finding a place to sleep, you know? So because of that, I couldn't really dive in. And then it wasn't really until I had myself stable and I had completed college and everything that I could really dive in and start calling myself a witch. So I haven't been practicing for decades or anything like that. The rate of time that I've actually been practicing with a daily practice hasn't been that long. Like maybe, I don't know, like my mid-30s is when I started. And everything prior to that was like study. I spent a lot of time learning about things, whether it was from regular life experiences, interacting with other witches who taught me along the way, picking up what I could out of the books that I could, different things like that really have informed my practice as a whole. And so I haven't been practicing for decades, but I've been learning how to my whole life, if that makes sense.
It does. I think a lot of us do a lot of read, especially as solitary practitioners. You do a lot of read, study, and you're a little hesitant to try to strike out, especially when you're new to the craft. I know there's a big, you know, idea that you got to have all the right tools and, you know, everything has to be just perfect. It's got to be the right phase of the moon. And, you know, there's so much of that kind of structure within a lot of the books that you read as you're coming into the craft that, you know, you kind of get caught up in that and you don't realize that it's really kind of coming from within. So although that can enhance the practice, it's not vital. And it's not till that realization comes to you that you really step out into your own and start practicing. So am I understanding correctly that you were homeless while you were in college?
No. So like when
that must have been a, whew, I mean, college is tough anyway, but boy, I couldn't imagine overcoming that kind of a challenge.
So I was homeless prior to college. And then for my first year of college, I went to like, you know, a local, junior college, to get started. And during that, my living situation changed dynamically multiple times, but I pretty much had a roof over my head the whole time. It was a lot of sleeping on couches. So that first year was really difficult. But then after that, I transferred to a college with dorms and I started living in dorms. And that was the first time that I was truly not homeless anymore. And even then, like on summer breaks, I'd have to like vacate the dorms and go stay at a friend's house for a while. So I didn't really have a home life until after college, when I finally started, you know, living in a place that was mine.
So when did you talk about your very first experiences with the craft? Since you're relatively new to it, that's kind of exciting, actually, because I get an opportunity to talk to a lot of seasoned practitioners. But, you know, to have someone who's been in the craft, I'm assuming less than a decade, because I don't think you're my age. I think you're probably younger. If you started in your mid-30s, you're probably younger than I am. So what was your very, very first experience with that? Was your sister a practitioner?
Yeah. So my very first experience with anything occult or witchcraft related, I was like 10 or 11, maybe 12. And I had seen my sister outside burning something. And of course, being the curious and, you know, pestering person that I am, I needed to know what was going on. So like I went through her stuff in her room and found
that she was thrilled with that.
Yeah, well, she didn't know at the time, but you know, I found a spell book for love magic or whatever, and that's what she was working on, I guess. Mm-hmm. But so that was like my first introduction to it, and then it wasn't really a mainstay after that. I was just like, oh, this is the thing. And then in my book I talk about in my book I talk about kind of losing my religion when I came out of the closet right around like 13-14, and that's when witchcraft really became an option for me. And I had friends who were like, I had a friend who was practicing, and I discuss her in the book, and her mother was practicing. So that's when I really kind of got a real introduction to it, via books like by Cunningham and Silver Ravenwolf. And this is like, I don't know, mid-90s at the time. I'm 40. So this had to be, I don't know, like I was
in. You're older than I thought you were, because I'll be 48 this month. So you're probably early 90s.
Yeah, I mean, it had to be like early to mid-90s, right? And so I can totally tell you the albums that were out that year.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Better than I can do anything else. So it was definitely when Tori Amos's Boys for Pele came out. And so whatever year that was. Anyway, so... What's that?
I think it was 93.
There you go. So probably 93 then. So I would have been like 12 or 13 in 93. So anyway, I like had a friend who really kind of introduced me to the real stuff, but it was all like very Wicca, which I didn't know at the time that this was there was any other ways. Mm-hmm. So and then from there, just a couple years later is when I became homeless at 15. So I didn't really have the time to dive in and understand as an adult for a long time. But then all through being homeless and, you know, growing into the adult that I am now, there's always been witches who were present at the really imperative and important times in my life. And they informed so much of my practice now, if that makes sense. So, I mean, like, it's kind of always been there, but just on a back burner. I waited a really long time, longer than I want to ever admit. But, like, I waited a long time to actually call in my power and own myself as a witch.
So are you part of an initiatory tradition, or would you consider yourself a solitary practitioner?
I am not part of an initiatory anything. I don't personally... I don't want anything to do with that. I never want dogma attached to anything that I'm doing spiritually, mm-hmm. because I believe in the connection that we all have to the source. And I think that however we access that connection, whatever our access point is for that is what works for us. Right. My access point is Hecate. So for me, I access the source through working with Hecate. And sometimes that has been done with other people, and sometimes that has been done by myself, mm-hmm. but never once have I ever like initiated into anything.
No, I understand. I was solitary for a long time and still consider myself somewhat of a solitary practitioner. I did initiate into the OBOD, and I'm in the OVATE grade, but it's still, because that's based in England, it's still very, you know, there's a seed group out here, but it's like once a month get together kind of thing. And so it's still very, but I was much the same way as you. I didn't want really a dogma, which is why I chose to go with the OBOD versus other traditions in terms of continuing my learning, because it's there is not really a lot of dogma. There's teaching, which is nice, and but there's not really a dogma, which I hesitate, because that's what I was getting away from in the first place.
Right.
So in terms of your practice, do you do daily devotions to Hecate? Is that
Yeah. So like, I like to start and end my days with gratitude, and specifically gratitude that I'm giving to Hecate for, you know, the various things that are bestowed upon me in my life, the ability to work with magic, the ability to work with the written word, things like that. And then the mundane things like my sons and my husband and our dogs or my job. And I like to give thanks for daily, I give thanks for things that were not so great in my life. So any of the traumas that I've experienced, I like to take a moment and give thanks for them, because I feel like that's a really imperative part of giving gratitude.
Absolutely. It informs who you are as a person today.
Yeah absolutely. And then on top of giving like daily gratitude, I also try to read my tarot every day. And that just, you know, that's just my daily practice of how I connect to the source on a daily basis. And then there are other things in my devotional practice toward Hecate. It very much has to do a lot with leaving offerings on the new moon and taking a day of rest during the new moon when I leave an offering, making sure like I basically never practice magic on the new moon, because I feel like that's Hecate's day. And then just other things like that, just random conversations I might have with Hecate as my connection to the source and things like that, I don't think are as devotional as my daily practice and my monthly offering.
Absolutely. But it's good to know that you have a regular foundational practice, because I think that's something a lot of people are missing. You know, I think life just gets busy, and sometimes people let those little details go, and that's when we start to kind of lose our ground in the craft. It's something that needs to be practiced and kept up. So if you're not, you know, and I'm not saying you have to do daily devotions, but I'm saying making it a regular thing to consciously employ the craft in your daily life is important. You know, and I think for some people that have been in the craft for a while, what happens is it kind of becomes automatic. Well, then you're not really conscious of it, and it kind of loses something, I think. So
I don't know. I think that when you really look at everything that we do innately as a human, we are naturally incorporating the craft into so much more than we realize.
Yes.
Whether it's like, oh, I totally made it to work on time, thank you, you know, or whatever, even in the smallest moments, I think that we are using devotional practices that maybe we're not giving ourselves as much credit for. And I think that it's really, it's a tight line to walk to say that any daily practice should look any particular way.
No, you know, I agree. I do. No, I get what you're saying. I'm just saying that I think sometimes we're not mindful of our practice all the time. Right. And it loses a little of its edge if we don't take an effort to pull ourselves into our practice on a conscious level. You know, when you become comfortable in your craft, it just becomes part of who you are. But I think it's just as important to take those kinds of steps towards conscious practice as well. A blending, like a balance, I guess, would be the best way to put it. So tell us a little bit about your book and how you came to write this book. Was it something that you thought, man, I feel called to do this. I need to do this. Hecate is telling me I should do this. And you approached Llewellyn, or how did that come about?
Well, when I was 8 years old, I had a knowing that I was, you know, meant to write. And that was the only option. Everything else I've ever done work related has just been a means to an end. I never have gone into a job thinking, oh, this is my job for good. I'll retire from this, because I've always known that I'm supposed to write and that that is what my sole purpose on this planet is for, that I was brought here to, that I chose to incarnate in order to deliver whatever message it is that is inside me or channeled through me and worked into my writing that is, I think, delivered directly from the source. And so the drive has always been there to write. And it was this random invite I got to go to a conference where Llewellyn had pitches. Heather Green from Llewellyn, she's an acquisitions editor. She was taking pitches for books. And I sat down and I talked with her. And she was like, send me writing samples. And I did. And then I was like, this is kind of what I'm thinking. And we workshopped the idea. And then I turned in a horrible first draft. And she was like, this will never work, but this is what I see. And then I turned in a really, I think, good second draft, handled the revisions, and then the book came out.
Very good. So tell me a little bit what life has been like for you since the book came out, because I believe you've already met with some pretty sizable success with the book.
I mean, honestly, my life doesn't feel different at all. So like, I mean, people reach out to me now, which is cool. Can't really answer all of them. So like, I feel like I'm learning how to set new boundaries, because you have to. Absolutely set up these boundaries where you're like, all right, well, cool. I'll give you access to, you know, me and my information, but, I appreciate that you want to talk with me, whoever, stranger, right? But I just can't be friends with everybody. That's impossible. And I have a whole like life that I'm living, which includes having a full-time job and being a father and being a husband and taking care of the land that I live on and working on my house and all kinds of stuff, right?
Exactly.
So none of that has really changed. I mean, I guess I'm like, I don't know. I don't feel like my life has really changed much with the book coming out. I mean, I'm fortunate enough to have a good enough job that pays my bills, so I don't have to worry about things. And, I'm fortunate enough to have a great husband who, you know, is also equally contributing. And because of those things, the book wasn't like born out of a necessity for like any kind of success or income. It was just born out of a necessity for doing what I came to Earth to do.
Right. And passing on the message and giving that pathway to others who may be needing to hear the words you have to say.
Exactly. And so I feel like the thing that the book has done is opened up that door a little bit wider. And so I have more access to being able to speak or talk on something, you know, or be part of a community that is helping to unite and grow and inform all of the witching world. And the book has been really great for that. The connections that it has made has been phenomenal. And I would say that there are some parts of my life that have changed. But as of yet, the changes that I plan, that I intend to have out of this, are only just in the beginning stages. I think it'll take several books to really get to a place where I'm like, oh yeah, so writing has completely changed my life.
Right. Yeah, I understand, because I've been writing since I was a child. It's something I've always done. So I know that drive, that need to put on a word, and it can be strong. So while you're in the course of writing the book, and this is because I like to understand the creative process, and it's different for everyone. Did you sit down and the book just, see, here's how it works for me. I have an idea that I'll have in my head, and I may do some research and make some notes for myself, but pretty much it's working in my head. And then I just sit down and type, and it all sort of flows out. That's how I know if it's going to be good or if it's not. If I have a hard time and I'm having to stop and restart, I may just chuck it and then start all over again because it's not coming like I feel it should naturally. There are others who take that process and they'll do like one chapter at a time, and then they'll work on the next chapter, and they make copious notes for themselves and they write down ideas and, you know, things like that. So what is your creative practice like in terms of your process?
So in terms of writing, my creative practice is very much, it starts with an outline. Well, really, it starts with the, you know, idea. And I'm like, all right, well, this is what I want to write a book about. For instance, I want to write a book that tells about my life and how, you know, I went from basically rags to witches. And in doing that,
that would have made a great title too, actually.
Actually, the publicist at Lou Ellen totally coined that term with me on a call once. And I was like, I'm using that. So I love it. But so I think that basically once I have the idea, it sits there and it's there and I can see it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
For instance, I have this book out right now, but I'm working on a second book and I know what my third book is. And I'm pretty sure I have an idea for a fourth book, but I also have book ideas that are like not in this genre that are all just kind of sitting there. Mm-hmm. And I have books that I've started and all kinds of stuff. And what I've learned works best for me when writing is to outline what I want to say first. Like, okay, here is the main point. Now here are all the things that get to that point. And then now I got to fill those in. Right. So it's almost like I draw out the picture, I put in the numbers, and then I paint by numbers, essentially. But then there's this whole thing that happens where as I'm painting by numbers, I'm like, wait, that 2 should be a 92. And I have to like totally change the color. And then suddenly the color changes everywhere that there should be a 92 on the picture. Does that make sense? Is that a good analogy?
Yes. No, I understand exactly what you're saying, because it's funny how, like you were saying, you have things that are not in the genre. I actually, my first book was a children's book. And my second book was like a parent's guide to raising your kids on a pagan path. Like, not so much like a, you have to do this, but more like suggestions and activities that parents could involve themselves with their child to pass on some of the teachings. And that one was called Raising the Magical Child. But no, I know exactly what you mean, because I have a book that I've been working on for some time now, kind of in cahoots with Dave the Bard. And the characters, I had in my head exactly what this book was going to look like, what it was going to be. And then when I sat down to the writing, the characters just took a totally different path. And the book is ending up being something completely different from what I originally envisioned. So no, I know exactly what you mean.
Exactly. Yeah, that's one of these really great things about writing in this specific genre of like educational, magical, spiritual understanding, right? Self-improvement or spirituality, esotericism in general, is that it's very easy to not delineate from your path as much, because it's not character driven. It's very much lesson driven. And you really can't get to the end of a lesson by you know, taking a warning.
The path.
Yeah. Like it's all gotta be the yellow brick road. You can't go jump onto the orange brick road or the green brick road. It's got to
take
be
that interesting looking path on the left.
Right.
Yeah, I definitely understand. Well, if I ask anything that's outside the realm of that's too personal, just say, but is your partner also practicing?
So your husband. First of all, there's nothing too personal for me. I believe in being transparent. I am like glass. So second of all, my husband is not a practitioner in any way. He's very much like Southern Christian type, Irish, raised like with the God of Abraham, the Bible, all of this. And so there has been pushback in the past, like when I first really like introduced this into my daily life with him and everything. And I was like, hey, I'm going to openly be this person now. There was some pushback, but now, I mean, like, he goes to all the witchcraft shops with me. Like, mm-hmm. we live in a really good area. We live in South Carolina, but it's kind of at the, like, northern tip. So it touches Georgia and North Carolina. And in both states, there's, like, we're, like, 2 hours from Atlanta, but we're also, like, 2 hours from Charlotte and, like, an hour from Asheville. So there's all these really great cities near us, even though we live in the middle of nowhere. And we'll like travel to a city for the day and I'll be like, well, let's go check out all the witch shops here.
Yeah, that's me.
And I'll like course, I'll like, you know, navigate the course to like figure out how to hit all the shops and then make it home by the end of the day. And so he goes and does that with me and he's open to it and he doesn't ever complain about it. And he sees things in there that, you know, seem to call to him. Every time he sees Ganesh, he's like, oh, I like him. And every mm-hmm. time he sees the green man, he's like, oh, I like him. So, like, he's called to certain things. And there's definitely aspects of him that are witchy, but he's not a practicing witch at all.
You know, I'm sitting here chuckling because it's almost the same situation with me. My husband was a cradle Catholic, very, you know, he's Mexican-American. So, you know, very, very devout Catholic. His mother was. Now he's not so much a practicing Catholic himself. He doesn't go to mass, but he's very, you know, he looked askance and gave me a lot of resistance, but he'll go to all the shops with me. He buys things for me. And there are things, it's funny because Ganesh actually, my husband's a social worker and he was having a hard time getting his foot in the door. And Ganesh spoke to me and told me, you know, he was here to help us basically. And it was at that point when I set up a small altar to Ganesh separate from my altar to the Morgan, of course, and started really kind of investing in that on my husband's behalf. He got his foot in the door.
Right. Right. And that's, so
it's kind of funny. I was like, gee, that sounds familiar because right. my husband likes him too.
Well, and that's what Ganesh does, right? Like he breaks down barriers and helps us through things.
Absolutely. So,
like it makes sense that he would, you know, be present. And I think that that's just the thing, like, you know, the right deity will let you know.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I totally agree with you there. Now, your sister having been involved in the craft or being a practitioner, are you guys still in touch? Does she know that you're now practicing? Do you guys kind of bounce ideas off each other? Or?
We do not bounce ideas off of each other, but yes, we actually live on the same plot of land.
Ha! My sister there you and I. Go.
She's like, I don't know, something like 2 acres away or whatever. But like we live on the same plot of land and we talk about witchcraft together, but we don't really run a lot of things past each other because her practice and her path is very different from mine. Mm-hmm. And so because we have these different paths, it's hard to be like, hey, I'm going to do this. What do you think? Because her path might not feel the same, you know, right. for what I'm doing as my path feels and vice versa.
Yeah, I can definitely understand that because it's kind of how it is with my sister and I. And yeah, but we don't live on the same plot of land.
Right.
She lives 5.5 hours away. No, I get what you mean. I mean, we talk a little bit about it. But it's not something that we, you know, delve, we share the same path or anything. So I can right. understand that. Now, what about the kiddos?
So I have a 19-year-old, who just graduated high school. Ooh. And he,
congratulations.
Thanks. He is like very not interested in any of that. I don't think he's a very spiritual person in general. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm a step parent. So I came into him when he was like 12, and he's got his own kind of thing. He has taken lessons from me, but not in the realm of spirituality.
Right.
But we also have a 9-year-old who will be 10 this year. And he came into my life when he was like 3. So the difference is very, it's very easy to look at his life and say, oh, I see my influence on him and how it affects him. But I don't have open conversations with him about like witchcraft in particular. Like I was collecting glass and nails for a jar out of one of our fire pits. And he was like, I'll help. And I'm like, all right. And he's like, what are we doing this for? And I explained to him what a witch's jar is and how they work and things like that. And he knows that I have special cards that he doesn't touch. And he knows that my altar is not for touching or like, you know, fucking around with in general.
Right.
And like, he's aware, but he also, I mean, I don't teach him things about it, but then he expresses interest or has conversations with us that that are like very in line with my belief system, even though right. I've never talked to him about it. Like just a couple weeks ago, he told us that he sees shadow people, and this is the first time he's talked about that. And so like, I have experience with shadow people in my life, and I've never spoken about that with him or around him. But then he like brought it up, and I'm like, all right, well, this is a good time to talk about this,
right?
And find out how he feels and, you know, like lead him as best as I can from my own experience based off of how he feels. Well, he doesn't feel like they're nefarious or anything. He's just like, I just see them. They spook me a little bit, but they don't feel bad. And I'm like, all right, well, like you can tell them to go, but if you don't mind them there, like that's fine too. And, you know, I just kind of can lead him and things like that. And he's definitely like, I don't know. Yeah. He's got like a clear sense to him and everything. So I just try to like nurture that.
Right.
And water it. But I
think that's kind of good parenting. That's the sign of good parenting. When you're not foisting your views, you're allowing their natural curiosity to create those teachable moments where they ask you about, they open the door and you create the circle. You inform them what you know, and you pass that knowledge to them, but allow them the maturity and the ability to make their own choices. I think that makes you an excellent parent.
Right. Like when he talked about the shadow people, I was like, oh, okay. So I believe you. And I used to see those too. And, you know, I just like, I validated him.
Right.
And that validation he's experiencing. And then I wanted to know what he felt about it. I wasn't going to tell him how I felt about it until I understood what he feels. And then after finding out what he feels, I can then be like, okay, that's different from me because I felt this way. And I told him to go, but you don't have to if that's not what you want to do. And I said, but if you ever feel like you have to, you can just tell them to go and that they have to listen. You know, like they can't bother you if you don't want them to. And just try to like, I mean, you know, let him know that there can be boundaries built and leave that conversation open in case he wants to talk about that.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent philosophy when it comes to kids in the craft. And I tried to keep that in mind myself when I was working on Raising the Magical Child, because I wanted activities where parents could be involved with their child and teach them what they know without foisting a specific belief on them. And I think that's really key, because I grew up in a household where you're going to believe what we believe or you're not going to live in my house. Right. And so, you know, when you don't have a place to go, you know, you just kind of follow along, even though it's not, your heart's not in it. And then for my experience personally, I was raised Church of Christ. It was, you know, if you didn't believe this, you were a bad person and evil. It took me a long time to get over that programming. And I think it's important not to program kids in that way. And it sounds like you're doing an excellent job of allowing your children to kind of come into it on their own, or to come to their own understanding of the world. And I think that's key.
Right. I agree. I don't believe that we should tell children how to think. We should just help them figure out how they think.
Yeah. And process their experiences in a way that's healthy. Absolutely. Yep. Absolutely. So you already have an idea. You're working on your second book. You want to give a little idea what that's about, or at least what the theme is, or are you keeping that to yourself for now?
So I'm keeping that to myself for now. I am able to tell you that I'm working on it with Martha Kirby Capo. She is the editor of the Agora on Pathos Pagan. And she actually wrote the foreword in my book as well, but she's just kind of my writing lobster. And we had this plan, and one day she was like, hey, you should write about this for your next book. And I was like, or you should write my next book with me and it'll be our book. And, you know, over some conversation, we decided let's do it. And so we're currently in revision mode on that. Like, we've already signed our contract, and we're just kind of busting it out.
Very good. Let's talk a little bit about going back to daily practice and the cards that others don't touch. Do you have a particular deck that you really like that you use, or are you a card connoisseur with thousands of decks in your collection?
I definitely don't have thousands of decks. I've tried out different decks and I've been like, oh, this is not for me. The Modern Witches deck. It's pretty RWS centric, but it's all basically women. And I wanted to work with it so bad. I really liked it because it's got this traditional imagery with like a new twist to it, but I couldn't get a read for the life of me out of them. So I gave them to my niece, who's interested in learning about this stuff. And then I really like my traditional Rider-Waite-Smith pixie deck, and I use that a lot, but they get bent and, you know, worn out. And so my shuffles aren't as good, and then I feel like frustrated, so I needed a new deck. So I recently got this new deck. It's very much not traditional. I can't for the life of me remember it because I've only had it for like 3 days and I don't recall the name of it. But it's really cool. It's got this like, it's got like super like medical drawings on it and then flowers. And there's lots of like skulls and muscles and organs. And I just,
you're going to have to tell me the name of that deck when you get a chance.
I have to look it up. It's inside and my husband works third shift, so he's sleeping. So I'm outside on my hammock.
Gotcha.
But, I'll get it for you and message it to you as soon as I can. But it's this really great deck. And I just got it at a book signing on Friday. And I was like, oh, I think I need this deck. And I've been looking for a new deck because I got the last deck that I got doesn't want to read for me, but it wants to read for everybody else. It's like dead on. Mm-hmm. Like I get the best intuition out of it. And I give the best reads for whoever when I'm using this deck, unless it's for me. And when I'm using it for me, nothing comes out. But so far, this new deck I've got seems to be pretty accurate. Like it's definitely communicating to me, but I'm learning the deck. And other than that, I have the City Tarot deck because I really liked it. But I don't really use that one as much at this point.
I find I kind of rotate through my decks because I am a passionate lover of art, but I cannot create it to save my life. My skill is in the writing, not in the drawing. So I have several decks that I've purchased that were kind of like collector decks or decks that I backed, but I don't use them on a regular basis for readings. I make it a point to kind of pick up every deck at least, you know, every now and then and kind of work through it and work with it for a while just to keep that connection. But I've had a couple of decks that I was super excited about. And then the minute it was in my hand, I'm like, yeah, this ain't working. And I had one deck that somebody gifted me that for the life of me, I could not. I think it was a Lascarbo deck and it was like the Princess Tarot. And I just did not connect that deck. I couldn't read it. I'm looking at the cards and going, I know I should know what the meaning is, but I'm hearing nothing. I'm feeling nothing. There's nothing. And I set it aside and came back a couple months later and could actually get, you know, I felt something with it, but it's still not a deck I connect with. Right now I'm using my backer deck for the Crow Tarot by MJ Coulinon.
Okay.
I really like that deck a lot, but I wanted a deck that was Morrigan centric because that's my, my goddess that I honor. So I wanted something that would be connecting for her, thinking I was going to use it more for myself than for others. And it's gone the opposite direction.
That's how it goes sometimes.
Definitely. Definitely. But I also like the Everyday Witch by Deborah Blake because it's just a cute little deck. It has a real positive feel. And I just kind of like the silly little pictures. Oh, I'm getting it mauled by a mutt here. Sorry.
Oh, no.
Her down. She's as big as I am when she stands up and she's in my face. So let me ask you then, since the next book's kind of a hush-hush, and I'm sure you're going to keep the third and fourth ideas to yourself, which I well understand, especially as a writer, but now I blanked on what I was going to say.
It'll come back to you.
It's been that kind of a day, folks. My neighbors were up until 2 this morning shooting cannons off over our house, so... Oh. You know, between the dogs having a freak out and, you know, just not being able to sleep. And, you know, I'm a little fried today. So in terms of how things are going, you mentioned book signings. So have you been doing a lot of those? Will you be doing more? Are there places where people can come out and connect with you with your book?
That was the first one I ever did. And I don't know if I'll do more. I want
to say, more. What was that experience like? I'm intensely curious.
It was like, I don't know, like
draining.
No,
exciting, I mean, and draining.
It was, I was nervous. And then, I was nervous because I thought nobody would come to see me. And then, I mean, it was like really fun because it was a cool, like, chill vibe, and I like the store. And it's just a local store in Greenville.
I was gonna say, was it close to your home or did you have to travel a bit? But yeah.
I mean, like, Greenville's only like
an hour away.
20-30 minutes. It was like it's pretty close. But I mean, I would travel to do book signings. I just, that was the store that was like, hey, do you want to do a book signing? I'm like, yeah, I absolutely do. So like, if there were a bookstore that was like, hey, would you come and do a signing? I would definitely do my best to not say no.
So everybody hit up your local metaphysical shops and make sure they've got Vincent's book in stock and
put the
pressure on to get a signing, get him out there and get him promoting himself.
Right. Especially now that like things are kind of getting to a more normal place.
Back to normal.
Yeah, like, I mean, I got myself vaccinated, and so I feel confident going out and doing these kind of things. And I mean, like, I want things to be normal. I think that anyone who's put out a book in the last, probably, I don't know, in the last year, like, of the pandemic, or a little bit more probably, has had new and unique situations that they had to learn how to deal with. And luckily, I am fortunately coming in at the very end of all of that. So things have been figured out. And there's been a lot of, you know, podcast invites or I had a book launch party with Jason Menke and Lara Tempest-Zarkroff, like on the day, because all three of our books came out on the same day.
Yes.
And so that was really cool, and it was very welcoming because, you know, these are two people who have been in the industry for a minute, too, and, like, have a name, and they're like, hey, guy, who nobody knows, we like you, and I'm like, all right, cool, thanks for liking me.
We're getting to know you.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, that's cool.
Like, start somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm cool with that. Like, I like the idea of a slow, like, powerful rise, you know what I mean? Like, a slow,
I was gonna say, it's sort of a warming up, and just all of a sudden, bam, there's Vinny.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's cool because you know, at the end of the day, for all of my fiery energy and my go out and get it kind of attitude, I think that I'm a pretty down to earth person. Like, I like to meet people where they're at. I like to be thankful and apologetic when it's necessary. I like to say nice things. I like to look for the nice thing, even if it's hard to find, you know. And so I just feel like at some point, the community is going to know, oh, yeah, Vinny, he's an okay guy. We can get down with Vinny, and that'll be fine, you know. And, like, hopefully everyone feels that way at some point. But if they don't, that's okay, too. Right?
Well, because, you know, I definitely think you'd be the kind of guy that'd be just chill to have a cup of coffee or some tea with and just, you know, talk about shoes and ships and sealing wax and cabbages and kings.
Yeah. I like to shoot the shit.
Yeah, absolutely. Who amongst us? Well, there are people that don't like to talk. See, that's why I think podcasting is the perfect format for me, because I love to talk.
Yeah, I just really enjoy words in general. I think that they're like some of the most magical things out there. And like,
oh, absolutely.
I would definitely say if I were going to categorize myself in any kind of, this is the type of witchcraft I do, I think I would call myself a word witch, because spoken word and written word and even like just like all of my spells include wording, right? And it's not always so much something I say, and sometimes it's something I write or inscribe. And so I really think that that is the spectrum of witchcraft that I involve myself in. Like I think that words are so powerful because they're intentions.
They are. And you know, I think you just gave me my new license plate, because I'm a speech language pathologist and I've been wanting to get some specialized plates. And I was like, you know, I wanted something that was going to meld my two worlds. And I think Word Witch is just exactly what it is.
That's excellent.
I owe you a debt of gratitude.
Yay.
I think that's going to be my next license plate. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I get what you say though, because I actually did a video on my YouTube channel about how words are a witch's most powerful tool, because it does bespeak your intention. And not only that, it takes your intention from the realm of the ether into the physical third dimension. Because right. Once you say that, it's out there. You can't take it back. So you have to be very, very careful in what you say and what you inscribe. I mean, even if you write something down and you erase it, that itself is a magical action, because you've now taken that word back. But once it's spoken, it's out there. So the minute you take the word from the written form to the spoken, it's out there. And yeah. Negating that is going to be considerably more difficult, you know. But I've actually used what I call eraser magic, where I will write something out, and if I want it out of my life, I erase it. And with the intention of that is erasing that out of my life. So, you know, that's a little bit of personal Natalie magic that I'll throw out there that I generally don't share. But that is actually something I have done in the past as a way to eliminate negative things from my life. And including negative characteristics from myself, because I have many flaws.
Right. Well, that's so, human review, isn't it?
It is. Darn those humans. Yeah. And here I thought I was a living goddess.
Probably are that too.
But aren't we all flawed? But absolutely, and I totally agree with you, which is why I think my drive to write is also strong. It's always nice to talk to other authors, because you understand that drive in ways that like my parents just don't get it. My husband doesn't get it either. He's like, why are you still on the computer? And I'm like, because I have this thought in my head, I need to get it out. If I don't write it down or type it out, it'll be gone. You know, and that's the other thing about words, is they are transient until they are brought into the physical, either through speech or through writing. And, you know, you may have that fantastic, fiery, fabulous idea, and if you don't get it down then, it will move on.
Yeah. Yeah. I can see that as an issue from a perspective of writing and using words in magic. Definitely. Absolutely.
You know, so when you are practicing, when you're doing a spell, you said you use the written word. Do you also incorporate sigils and pictures, or for you, is it more about the written word and the incantation of?
So everything I do magically is led by my intuition, whether it's delivered from the source through download or innate understanding of how to do something. It just kind of always depends. What I do today for, I don't know, let's say a road opener spell might not be the same thing I do the next time I do a road opening spell or gate breaking. Sometimes I do incorporate sigils and sometimes I do not incorporate sigils. So it just really depends. I tend to, you know, those little chime candles that are super great because they burn for like an hour, hour and a half.
Oh,
and
yeah.
They don't really leave a whole lot of wax behind.
Yes.
So I love to use those and I buy them nonstop because I love them so much. And you can get like full on packs that are like have all the colors and everything.
Exactly.
And so like I'll write full on paragraphs on those things with my little seam ripper because that's what I use. To
I have a horn that was stuck in my shoe that I use.
Oh, okay. I just use like a little seam ripper and I inscribe into my candles, sometimes full paragraphs, and sometimes it's just a word or sometimes it's the intention that I'm working on. So it just really depends. And if I feel the need to use a sigil, then I do that. I believe that like sigils are like words. It's
agree.
A written intention. So it's similar in that way.
It's word is picture for me. You take a word or a concept and you turn those words into a picture that represents the entire statement. And depending on the size of my candle, because I also use like birthday candles, I agree. But yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. Love those candles. I go through copious amounts of them, actually. Because I'm a big candle magic person. I love fire and So I know exactly Same. What you mean. And Same. It's definitely... Yeah, I'm the same way. And my thing is, like, when it comes to my grimoire, I consider myself kind of a bad witch in the regard that I don't always write my spells down because I don't do the same spell twice the same way ever. I don't think I've ever followed my exact wording or thoughts or whatever because it's always slightly different. The situation's always slightly different. So what I might do is I might have the bones of the spell in my grimoire, but I'm going to jimmy it to suit the situation.
Right. That's exactly what I do. I'll use my book for the research that I do, kind of seeking out correspondence or writing down correspondence that work for me for that spell, even if they don't make sense and why they make sense for that. And then I use that as a basis or outline for anything that I move forward with, but I don't write my actual spells down.
Right.
It's pretty rare.
I'll write like a format for a spell, if that makes sense. But it when I do it again, it may not look anything like what's in my grimoire. I think I'm more recording it in the hopes that my grandchild or children may carry forward and they might find it useful or at least amusing. You know, it's almost as if my grimoire is for me, but it's also for a future generation.
Right.
But not on a public basis, if that makes sense. And it's again, I think if you don't make the craft your own, it's not going to be successful for you. So even if somebody were to rip a page out of my grimoire and say, oh, I'm going to do this spell, I don't know that it would work for them because I don't know if they'll put the same, you know, I don't necessarily write down the full bodied intention of what that spell was for. Again, it's more kind of like like a recipe, you know, this is what I use. This is why I use this particular time, but next time I might use something else. You know, I mean, if my road opener spell, for example, is to open the road of communication between myself and someone else or between two other people, then, you know, I might use candles that are in shape forms of people, you know, facing each other. And the sigil might represent the conversation I want these two people to have, or I want to have with this individual. It might be just a plain candle that I've written, like you said, an entire paragraph on, or scribe the sigil, or, you know, so it will be vastly different than what's just kind of jotted down in the book. You know, I'll kind of write down, I use this for this intention, this for this intention. But again, my intentions are in my head. So what I feel called to use will vary.
Yeah, that's definitely the same way I process everything.
Yeah. I think, you know, a lot of people would tell me, well, you know, that's not the proper. Well, that's how I operate. So if it works for me, it works for me.
Yeah, I don't believe that witchcraft should have, like, rules. I mean, like, however you choose to witch is the right way for you.
Right. I think we have common core principles and understandings, but I don't think that it's one path suits all, because we're all individuals. How can one path suit each and, you know, every individual? It's impossible. You know, and that's not the craft, in my opinion.
Right.
You know, again, in my humble opinion.
So. I think that you would be hard pressed to find other witches who don't feel the same way, though.
Yeah. I have talked to a few people that have been like, well, you know, you need to have an initiatory tradition. And there's a lot of gatekeeping, and there is something to be said for learning from others and practicing with others in terms of bringing your energies together for a common core purpose. But at the same time, I don't feel I have to practice with anybody else to make my magic work.
Right.
So I definitely think that. So what's your plan for future? Are you going to be, I think you said you wouldn't mind doing other tours. Do they have that in the works?
So at the moment, there's not really anything like that in the works. But I mean, you know, days can change in moments. So I just keep an open mind about everything that I'm doing. I think that 2022 is going to be a big different year for everyone.
Oh, definitely.
And I'm kind of hoping that I can, you know, write on this book and the book that's going to come out somewhere within that time frame, and be able to, you know, get more things going. But like I said, like, I have a full-time job, so touring isn't exactly a thing that I know I can pull off very often, because right. I only have so much PTO, you know?
Right. And, no, I get you.
And so, I don't know, I just try to be cognizant of that and pay attention to what
I'm doing.
Well, and
you have a family too, like it or not, that, you know, especially when you have a young child, you still have a fairly young child in the household.
Right. You know,
traveling takes a toll. When you're either away, or even if you bring your child with you, it can be sketchy. So,
yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, like, hopefully, you know, just the organic process works itself out. I just kind of like go with the flow and see how things work themselves to those, you know, end points. But also, like, I'm constantly striving to get to a place where writing and witchcraft is my everyday, all-day job.
And, yeah, I feel you.
And I think that a lot of people are. And it really just comes down to the perseverance of pushing for it.
Right.
And it could take me a long time to get there. But what I know, based off of the life that I've lived, the empirical evidence that I have, is that if I want something, I can get it.
Right.
And I mean, that's what magic is. Right. That is, like, I mean, like, literally manifesting your desires. And I mean, it takes a lot of mundane work, and it takes a lot of, you know, sweat equity. But when you put it in, it's bound to pay off.
Right. And it is. And again, you get out of the craft what you put into it.
Right.
Which kind of goes back to that original thought. How heuristic of us. Let's come back to that. Right. So tell us a little bit specifically about the book you have out now. I know you talked about where the book came from. What are talk a little bit about some of the chapter headlines or sort of the, you know, this is how I proceeded through the book. and your experience with the craft and how it came to save your life. I think I don't want you to give away the book. I don't want people to buy it and read it. But, you know, talk about the path of your book.
So basically through using very personal and raw kind of segments of my life where I experienced trauma, I'm able to dive into lessons on witchcraft from things like understanding trauma as it is, you know, understanding what trauma is and how it can empower you, and that it doesn't need to ruin your life, but that it can sometimes often improve your life once you work through it, right? So like from dealing with, every chapter opens up with basically a story about me, like a memoir type story, and then it follows through with, if I had known about, I don't know, the clairsenses, right? If I had known about the clairsenses when I went through this thing, then it could have informed me better. And now that I do understand it, let me help you understand it and then potentially guide you in how you can use this in other real life situations. Because let's face it, like, magic is not actually about like this fantastic kind of world. Magic isn't all, and it's not this way for everybody, but at least for me, magic is not about like fairies or the unseen realm or, you know, reaching to the other side of the veil, talking with the dead, any of that. For me, magic is very much about how I can affect my real world life and put these intentions into these like laser focus kind of energy fields and then use the energy around me to like feed that laser focus, right?
Right.
And so basically it's all very based in real world stuff and transformative stuff. That's why it's practical advice for transformative magic, because like everything that I discuss is practical applications of using magic on a regular basis to help, you know, improve a situation or understand where you're at better, or sometimes even just knowing how to listen to your higher self. And so what I do in the book is kind of just share these very personal tragedies or traumas and then dive into a lesson that is informed by that.
Well, what I think is important to note is that, especially with some of the new research coming out, because my husband's a social worker and he's working on his LCSW, I kind of stay up on some of this stuff, but you can heal from trauma. And I think that's important for people to understand that trauma can be very damaging, but like you said, it doesn't have to be. It can be something you can heal from and grow from. And I absolutely agree with you in that. I think communicating with the dead and, you know, piercing the veil and the esoteric practice and the crafting is part of witchcraft, but that's not its main purpose. Its main purpose, as you said, is to be a transformative force in the life of the witch and the people they are using their craft for. I think everybody has the abilities. I think everybody has some form of clairs and some sort of psychic ability. It's tapping into it, and not everyone is open to tapping into it. My husband is extremely intuitive, extraordinarily intuitive, probably one of the most intuitive. I say he's more witch than I am, but he's not open to the idea of calling it that. And, you know, he doesn't understand how to use that to manifest. And that's,
well, I'll tell you what, the thing is that everyone has the gifts that a witch is actively tapping into. And I would push so far as to say they are also doing it. They just are not labeling it under the term of witchcraft. And so, like, when a Christian is praying to the God of Abraham, mm-hmm. and they're like, I really need this relief, or I really need this reprieve, and then they receive it, and they're like, that's God giving this to me. Well, really, they practiced witchcraft.
Yeah, I agree with you. To me, and, spellcraft is nothing but amped up prayer.
Right. I mean, maybe not even amped up. Maybe prayer is just as powerful, right? And that's them right. tapping into the source and manipulating their surroundings or the energy around them mm-hmm. to do that. So, like, really, the word witchcraft is just subjective to right. us as witches. And it's no different than what, like, you know, a Christian or a Muslim are doing when they're praying, or, like, even a Hindu. Like, anyone who is actively attempting to tap into the source through whatever tap in they deem necessary for them, they're all basically doing the same thing, and it is manifesting our desires. And when we say it, I use witchcraft to do that, we're saying, hey, I'm tapping into these things to get what I want, but they're not as mainstream, let's say, as some of these other bigger religions. And mm-hmm. so I fall under this witchcraft because I'm like tapping into the energy of this plant or the earth or this fire or the written word on a candle, as opposed to, or even like a deity that is ancient, right? And not like readily
accepted in the mainstream.
Exactly. So no, like, it's not like not that a witch can't work with Ganesh, right? But like, they're not right. working with Ganesh in the same way that maybe a Hindu person is.
Definitely not. And I speak to that from experience.
Right. And so, like, I think that they're all like, what we're all doing is the same thing. And we just have different labels for all of it.
I agree. And it's kind of a, I think it speaks to what underlies us in terms of the human experience and how mm-hmm. we express that human experience. So I see we're coming close to the end of our time, and it's been so much fun to talk to you, but I wanted to give you the opportunity to tell people how to get their hands on your book.
Yeah. So you can get your hands on my book anywhere that books are sold. If you go to Amazon, you can order it there. The really great thing about ordering from Amazon is you can also write a review if mm-hmm. you like it, or I guess if you didn't, and just speak your mind about it as a verified purchase, which is really awesome. You can order it directly from Llewellyn. You can go to your local bookstores, witchy shops, and ask them to carry it or Absolutely. Get it in there for you.
Do that, guys. Get in there and let's support our community for sure.
And one of the best ways to find all of those things is to just simply follow me on Instagram. Because once you follow me on Instagram, you'll have access to my Linktree, which keeps you up to date with anything that's going on in my life. And also where you can get anything that I'm doing.
Now, your Instagram, is it just your name?
Yeah. So my Instagram is Vincent, V-I-N-C-E-N-T _ Higginbotham, H-I-G-G-I-N-B-O-T-H-A-M. And you can just search that and find me.
Awesome. Well, thank you so very much for coming on the Purple Mystic with me today. It's been a joy to talk to you. And I hope when your next book comes out, or even before then, I'll get a chance to chat with you again, because I think you and I have had kind of a stimulating conversation. So
I'm really happy to
conversation.
Anytime you want to talk, you just let me know. I'm happy to hop on and be a guest.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. I hope